When bombs went off at the finish line of the Boston Marathon, President Obama was quick to speak out, but he was cautious about what he said. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This Politics Wednesday, we ask our analysts why how a president reacts matters, how leaders have reacted differently to acts of terror, and how the bombing might affect current political priorities. Also, the latest on immigration and gun legislation. Joining us today, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College and Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. Politics Day here on River to River starts right after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and it's Politics Wednesday. And, of course, we will be busying ourselves addressing terror as far as our politics go. And as we heard, the latest news there, a letter addressed to President Obama testing positive in preliminary tests for the poison ricin. That comes on the heels of federal authorities revealing a letter sent to Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi, also testing positive for ricin. All fit into the context of what we had Monday. President Obama on Monday responding quickly to the Boston Marathon bombing. Let's talk about that in a minute, but first welcome our guests. Wayne Moyer is the Rosenfield Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College, joining us by phone for this Politics Day. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Ben. It's a pleasure to join you.
Thank you for being with us. Tim Hagel is with us in the Iowa City studio, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Tim, thank you.
You're welcome.
Coming. And let's talk about terror this first hour and how it fits into our political landscape. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. President Obama on Monday responding quickly to the Boston Marathon bombing. He's offered his condolences, telling reporters that he had been in contact with the FBI and Homeland Security officials, but not going so far as to speculate about whether the bombing was an act of terror.
We still do not know who did this or why, and people shouldn't jump to conclusions before we have all the facts. But make no mistake, we will get to the bottom of this, and we will find out who did this, we'll find out why they did this. Any responsible individuals, any responsible groups will feel the full weight of justice. Today is a holiday in Massachusetts, Patriots Day. It's a day that celebrates the free and fiercely independent spirit that this great American city of Boston has reflected from the earliest days of our nation. And it's a day that draws the world to Boston's streets in a spirit of friendly competition. Boston is a tough and resilient town, so are its people. I'm supremely confident that Bostonians will pull together, take care of each other, and move forward as one proud city. And as they do, the American people will be with them every single step of the way. You should anticipate that as we get more information, our teams will provide you briefings. We're still in the investigation stage at this point, but I just want to reiterate, we will find out who did this, and we will hold them accountable.
That was the president on Monday. On Tuesday, yesterday, the president no longer hesitant about describing the crime.
This was a heinous and cowardly act. And given what we now know about what took place, the FBI is investigating it as an act of terrorism.
An act of terrorism. Tim and Wayne, let's go with you first, Wayne. The significance of President Obama not using terror or terrorism initially on the first day.
Well, I think that it is good that he was prudent and cautious on the first day. There's always a risk of, by blowing the situation up, making it sound serious before you have really deadly serious before you have really good information, that you might play exactly into the terrorists' hands. What they want is to create panic in the American public. And until you're sure what's going on, I think it would have been a mistake to build up the fears of the public.
Tim Hagel.
Well, it was pretty clear that it was deadly serious right from the get-go. The problem with using that particular term was that there was so much emphasis put on it and his lack of using that term with the Benghazi attack several months ago. And here, it's pretty clear that it was an act of terror, although those who would normally criticize Obama really weren't critical of him. They thought he did a good job in terms of coming out and, yes, not conflating the situation creating panic, but recognizing that this is a serious situation and that it clearly was an act of terror, as the administration came out the next day and indicated. But the question is what, you know, who was behind it? Was it domestic terrorism? Was it some international type terrorist group, a lone wolf? We don't know. And to that extent, the president was right to basically come out quickly, but still say, we don't know. Let's not speculate.
Who, of course, the big question, and we're waiting for the answer to that. We don't know if it will take hours, days, weeks, months to get the answer to that question. And I do want to follow up, Tim, on that point of whether it's domestic in its source or if whether it's a foreign source like Al-Qaeda will have implications. Let's go down that road in a few minutes. But I wonder, how does Wayne Moyer using the word terrorism change the conversation?
Well, what it does is it focuses the debate on who possibly could have caused this to happen. And if there's an immediate feeling, I think, in a lot of people's minds to sort of focus on the Middle East, and we know there's been domestic terrorism as well, and I think being a little bit cautious on this allows you to be a bit more open-minded before people come to absolutely firm conclusions as to who might have caused this.
Mm-hmm. Under Obama's administration, we have had attempted acts of terrorism, though this is the first what we call successful one. Tim Hagel, do we learn anything here about how the president has evolved in treating acts of terrorism or attempted acts of terrorism?
Well, sure. And certainly, as you say, this has been the most successful of these. The others were foiled attempts, and so to a certain extent, you can take a more low-key approach to them. But clearly, as you know, was indicated, when you do have people dying and so many people, over 100 people injured, that you can't call it anything but terrorism. But then again, in terms of the response, we do have to wait and see, well, who was behind it? And quite frankly, we're getting kind of impatient in this country. And I think maybe it's in a reaction to the 24-hour news channels and social media where we expect answers right away. And that's just not always how these things work. And so we have to exercise as a people a certain amount of patience while various investigatory bodies do their work and do it in a way that's not always as forthcoming as people would perhaps like. And I saw Rudy Giuliani talking about this the other day or yesterday, I guess it was, where we don't want the law enforcement to reveal everything that they know because in certain respects that may tip off the people that actually committed the crime and make it harder to catch them.
Mm-hmm. We're referencing unsuccessful attempts occurring in the Obama administration. We go back to Christmas Day 2009, an attempted bombing of a Delta airliner headed for Detroit. After that, it took the president 3 days to appear before cameras to talk about that episode. Of course, no loss of life there, a foiled attempt, an unsuccessful attempt, but nevertheless one that led to some sharp criticism from Republicans in Congress. The president at that time vacationing in Hawaii, I believe. Leading to, I think, some comment that he wasn't taking it seriously enough, Tim Hagel.
Sure. And the whole no drama Obama tag got attached to him at that point. And I think that's part of it, too. And certainly Obama has been under criticism many times by Republicans for the being on vacation while certain things were happening or taking off while Congress was supposedly discussing something very important. So he seemed to be disengaged, at least in the view of many Republicans. Here, this time he was there and he has learned. And it actually surprised me a little bit that it took them perhaps this long to figure out that they need to get out in front of the cameras and basically help to control the message. And the reason I say I'm surprised is because it's something they knew very well from their campaigning in terms of getting out, getting the message out, controlling the message. And they didn't seem to understand that right away, that you need to do that for these types of issues as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you follow that analysis, agree with that analysis of how the president has evolved on this issue, Wayne Moyer?
I certainly do. It's clear, and I think the president has learned this, that when something like this happens, you have to come out very quickly. On the other hand, you have to be careful not to say more than the information that you have available. And I think he did a good job this time in that respect.
Mm-hmm. President Obama on Monday in that first briefing for reporters, a part of his statement that we didn't play, but I'll quote here. He said, "I've updated leaders of Congress in both parties. We reaffirm that on days like this, there are no Republicans or Democrats. We are Americans united in concern for our fellow citizens." Tim Hagel, any sense of a bipartisan moment here? Of course, we have to go back to the days following 9/11. Certainly in order of magnitude, something much different, on a much different area of the scale. But are we seeing that now? How long are we likely to see bipartisanship?
Well, it will depend a little bit on what we might expect or what people might try to do with that moment of bipartisanship, because the second that you start to talk about, well, do we need to do this, or this needs to be our reaction, or we need to pass legislation, then all of a sudden it can become quickly political. We didn't see that quite as much with 9/11, a much more serious event, obviously, and it allowed the government to engage in massive restructuring, creation of Homeland Security, and so forth. I don't think we'll see that this time, but it may depend on what we find out. That if we find out that this is maybe the first of many strikes that we'll see from some international organization that has now decided it's going to start using IEDs in the United States, then maybe we'll have to make adjustments and maybe you'll get bipartisan support for it. But on the other hand, if it's some lone wolf sort of situation, if it all of a sudden it becomes political, is even a few members on each side of the aisle have already started to make noises along those lines, then it can quickly devolve.
Maybe you're referring to Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell. He in his first statement on Monday, voicing sympathy for the victims and their families, praising the first responders and vowing justice to those responsible. But he also said this line: "The complacency that prevailed prior to September 11th has returned." Now, McConnell's office stressed that there is nothing political about the speech that he gave and should not be interpreted as such. Wayne Moyer, I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah, I mean, historically, the Republicans have had the higher ground in terms of national security issues and even strong responses against terror. Obama, when he got rid of, killed Osama bin Laden, got the upper hand. And if there's any sign here of government failure, if the investigation afterwards indicates that there were big gaps in our counterterrorism pre-screening of this, then it could very well become a major partisan issue.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to that question that you raised earlier, Tim Hagel. The implications if it is found to be a domestic terrorist versus a foreign terrorist, Al-Qaeda, for instance. Let's take have you both share your thoughts on if this is Al-Qaeda or some other foreign entity.
Well, it's hard to say, again, at this point, and some of the analysis that I've seen on this suggests that there are elements to what happened and the items used and the methodology that point to either side. There are certain aspects to this that point to what we've seen in prior domestic terrorism, like the Olympic Park bombing, and it was in 96, 95, I'm forgetting the year here, 96, I think. And so that there's that aspect to it. On the other hand, the pressure cooker thing is something that's been used in the IEDs in Afghanistan. So we don't know. And we just don't know whether it's a domestic lone wolf kind of a thing or somebody that's the lone mm-hmm. wolf that's sort of your own little cell of Al-Qaeda or something of that nature.
I guess it's hard to say. Yeah, no, we don't know. And I'm not asking either of you to be an investigator. What I'm asking you to do is to speculate a little bit about if it is – foreign in nature, or if it is domestic, what are the political implications for that, Tim Hagel,
well,
for each of those paths?
As far as the political, if foreign, some Al-Qaeda, whether lone wolf or otherwise, that it would seem to be along the lines of what we would be expecting. And of course, it's going to be questions about security and so forth, and they obviously have political ramifications. On the other hand, if it's domestic, what most people have been speculating about is that perhaps a right-wing type person, because of Tax Day, April 15th and Patriots Day and all of that, I'm not sure that that fits. But on the other hand, if it is somebody like that, then all of a sudden, again, that becomes very political, saying, oh, see, this is what happens. And, you know, we have pushback. And really what all of this argument is aimed at is that sort of big group in the middle, the independent voters, and mm-hmm. so sort of what their reaction is going to be.
Join our conversation. Do you agree with what you hear? Do you have a new take on what's been happening this week as far as the response to the bombing on Monday. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Post something on our Facebook if you'd like, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. To you, Wayne Moyer, on that point of domestic versus foreign.
Well, if it's foreign, I think there will be a strong, and we can identify where it's coming from, there will be a strong desire to retaliate. And that could well mean military retaliation of some sort or another. That will, of course, have implications for the Defense Department. It may conceivably have budget implications. We've had budget downsizing as a result of sequestering. But if it's international, there will be a general desire after 9/11. This has been an attack on the United States, and the United States needs to retaliate against whoever has launched that attack.
Mm-hmm. Any other political reaction you found noteworthy in the last few days, Tim Hagel?
No, I think that at least at this point, again, you get a few people that will make comments and sort of try to make it political in one reason or another or connect it with other issues. But for the most part, people have been pretty responsible in terms of saying, okay, this is terrible. We'll deal with the victims first. Now let's deal with the investigation. Although, as I said before, people are kind of impatient saying, well, why don't we know this? Why don't we know that? Why didn't you get a call? Well, we don't know everything that law enforcement knows, and we also shouldn't know everything that law enforcement knows at this point. So we just need to sort of wait and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Now, when investigators have enough information to find out to charge someone, I wonder how are we likely to find out about it, because that has some politics connected with it as well. For instance, Wayne, are we likely to see a death of Osama bin Laden type announcement from the president, or would it come lower level from the FBI and a director?
I think it will depend on who they identify as the source of the attack. My guess is if they really identify someone definitively, it will probably come from the president. If there's some tentative things or some people are arrested but there's still a little bit of uncertainty, it may well come from the director of the FBI.
Tim Hagel.
Yeah, that's pretty reasonable in terms of what we might expect. Also, it will depend on if it's the kind of a lone wolf, unknown sort of person, as opposed to if it's maybe somebody who is a known operative in Al-Qaeda. And so it's kind of a matter of what political value do you get. And there's also a bit of political turf that's involved. And obviously, the president has a high ground on this. But if it goes down to the next level, are we talking DOJ? Are we talking Homeland Security? Are we talking FBI, which, of course, is part of the DOJ? Department of Justice. So we just kind of have to wait and see what they know and how much they know, and then we'll see how it gets announced.
Coming up on a break in a couple minutes, and we do want to, in our second half hour, certainly talk about the immigration legislation, gun legislation as well. But in wrapping up this conversation, how does something like this affect the priorities in our nation's capital as far as legislation? Can you see it affecting it now at all, Wayne Moyer?
I think what it does is it shifts attention to this, and this will become a principal issue. We're going to be talking about gun control later. My guess is that there will probably be less attention to gun control simply because this issue is going to be for at least a short period of time at the top of the political agenda.
Tim Hagel?
Yeah, absolutely, and especially with gun control. And, well, maybe I'll just hold off on that until we talk about it later.
Okay.
I'll give you a preview. But one of the things that pops into my mind is immigration, which we also might talk about, where if you're talking a question of border security, that's part of immigration, but it's also one of the things that Republicans have been concerned about in terms of even terrorism, securing our borders. And so if, in fact, there's any connection with somebody who is here illegally that committed this act, well, that's going to be part of that conversation as well.
In fact, a congressman, a U.S. congressman from right here in Iowa, Representative Steve King of Iowa's 4th District, calling for comprehensive immigration reform to be put on hold in light of Monday's bombing. He cited some speculation. It turned out to be misplaced speculation that the attacker was a student from Saudi Arabia. But his quote to National Review, some of the speculation that has come out is that, yes, it was a foreign national, and speculating here, that it was potentially a person on a student visa. If that's the case, we need to take a look at the big picture. Others in that category, Steve King, of course, not backing immigration reform here.
No, absolutely. It's again, there was a lot of ifs in that statement, and perhaps it might have been better to not get into that speculation, since it turned out that particular student apparently was not involved. It's true. If it does turn out that it's somebody that, as I say, was here illegally, then that can become part of the immigration border security aspect. I don't know that we would want to be in a position of dropping it entirely. As important as finding out who committed this act of terrorism is, we have other issues that have to be dealt with as well.
Mm-hmm. Wayne Moyer, I'm wondering if either of you are talking using this to talk about the politics in your classroom. How do you use this as a learning moment?
Well, I teach international relations, and the way this comes up for me is the danger of taking something like this and blowing it out of proportion. And overreacting to it, and sometimes if that happens, you end up doing more than you need to do, and you end up diverting resources from other things, and so you lose a sense of proportionality.
Mm-hmm. In the classroom for you, Tim Hagel, at the
University
of Iowa.
I actually did. Yesterday I was teaching my criminal justice course and happened to be talking about changes of venue due to excessive publicity. And I had mentioned the Boston bombing a couple of times, that given the amount of publicity this is going to get, if they actually catch somebody and put them in a criminal trial, that they may have to, like they did for the Oklahoma City bombing, change to a different venue.
Mm-hmm. When we come back, we want to talk about possible immigration legislation, also gun legislation. When we come back, we'd like to have you join our conversation as well. And just a reminder of what we're going to talk about when we come back. While most of us slept, this Senate bipartisan Gang of Eight formally filed this long-awaited, it's called the Border Security Economic Opportunity and Immigration Modernization Bill of 2013. That's the only time I'm going to say its complete name. Clocks in at 844 pages, and it proposes a 13-year path to citizenship for qualified undocumented immigrants, along with some goals to secure the nation's southern border, a realignment of legal immigration systems to favor more employment-based visas. Now, a bipartisan House group that has been working behind the scenes on its own compromise bill applauded the upper chamber's legislation and hopes to reach its agreement soon. When we come back, we want to have a highlight from this past weekend. Saturday Night Live weighing in here, and we'll see if they nailed it here too. But we'll have news about immigration, also gun legislation, a vote on the proposal to expand background checks on firearms, expected later today in the Senate. It's a vote that highlights the challenges facing President Obama and Senate Democrats as they move to the most important congressional vote on gun control in many, many years. How many years do we have to go back to the 90s?
Mm-hmm. Mid-90s.
Oh.
Okay. When we come back, we'd like to have your questions, your views on terrorism and politics, also immigration legislation, gun legislation, and whatever happens to be on your mind politically. We'd enjoy hearing from you. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. It's Politics Wednesday on River to River. Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College with us, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. We hope you'll stay tuned and join us with a question or comment. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We may feel like the rivers are everywhere as the skies open up and let us have several inches of precipitation today, but glad you're with us on this rainy Wednesday, Politics Wednesday. Tomorrow on this program, We focused on the Boy Scouts of America in the past on this show, and specifically that decision to postpone its decision allowing gay and lesbian members to join. Tomorrow on this program, we'll explore the other national scouting organization, Girl Scouts of the USA. We'll talk with Girl Scout leaders to discuss their policies, what they're focusing their attention towards, and the evolution of a Girl Scout from Daisy to Gold Award. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can do that tomorrow as we talk about the Girl Scouts of the USA. Today, Politics Wednesday, we talked about the politics of terror, of course, with that tragic bombing on Monday, still searching for the answer to the question, who, which will be revealed in we don't know how long. But let's move to some other topics in politics. While most of us slept, the Senate bipartisan Gang of Eight formally filed the long-awaited bill to address comprehensive immigration reform. Wayne Moyer with us of Grinnell College, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. 844 pages, gentlemen, a 13-year path to citizenship for qualified undocumented immigrants, goals to secure the nation's southern border, a realignment of legal immigration systems to favor more employment. Now, the bipartisan House has its own group. There is a group in the House. Tell us, what do you think are the – is it still amnesty, the path to citizenship? Tim Hagel, that is the sticking point here. And if so, what is the solution that has been found apparently?
Well, we don't quite know if the solution has been found. Certainly the Gang of Eight has worked very hard on it and trying to find something. And at least as far as the criticism that they face from the Republican side has always been this concern over amnesty. Are you basically rewarding people for having violated the law, plus the fact that they've seen this amnesty given before and it didn't solve the problem? And so they're very skeptical of something. And so Rubio on a variety of Sunday shows was talking about this and made the point that it's not amnesty. Amnesty is just pure forgiveness. This is a very difficult path and so forth. And that's what he's really going to have to sell.
Okay. We want to have your opinion, your questions. Are you hopeful about the prospects for immigration reform this year? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps it personally affects you or your family. 1-866-780-9100. As we're talking about possible immigration legislation going through both chambers to be signed by the president. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. You mentioned Senator Marco Rubio, a highlight from this past weekend. We actually have some tape on that. People saying that in terms of the immigration discussion in the media, Senator Marco Rubio did the Ginsburg two better. Now, the Ginsburg was named after Monica Lewinsky's attorney, referring to a feat of appearing on 5 news networks in one day. Senator Rubio this weekend appeared on 7 networks, including 2 Spanish language networks, to talk about the specifics of immigration reform worked out by this Gang of Eight. Here he is on CBS's Face the Nation explaining how the proposal would handle the approximately 11 million undocumented immigrants currently in the U.S.
Well, first of all, I think it's important to point out this is not a theory. They are actually here. We're not talking about bringing millions of people here illegally. They are here now, and they're going to be here for the rest of their lives. The proposals in the past that some have advocated is to make their lives miserable so that they'll leave on their own, or to basically ignore the problem, which is happening now and is de facto amnesty. And what we're proposing is to actually deal with them in the following way, and that is they'll have to come forward and pass a rigorous background check. If they're criminals, they won't qualify. Although if they pass that background check, they'll be given the opportunity to pay an application fee and a fine, and in return for that, they will get a worker permit that will allow them to stay in the U.S., work, travel, and pay taxes. They will not qualify for any federal benefits of any kind, including Obamacare, and they will have to be in that system for over 10 years before they can apply to the existing legal immigration system for a green card. Not a special path, the same path as everybody else. And of course, that will be dependent upon certain security measures being met. That means securing the border, universal E-Verify, and a universal entry-exit tracking system. If those 3 things are not in place, that green card process won't begin, even if the 10 years has elapsed.
Rising star in the Republican Party, Senator from Florida, Marco Rubio, this weekend on, I guess that was CBS's Face the Nation. Wayne Moyer, will the GOP buy into Marco Rubio's assertion that this bill would actually be stricter on the undocumented population?
I think there's a much greater chance now than there's ever been before. and the fact that a good part of the business community is behind this. The last election, the results of the last election, where Obama had such a decisive victory, and something like 70% of the vote of minority populations voted for Obama. I think all of those things make it much the outlook much more positive than it has been up until now.
Tim Hagel, Marco Rubio's endorsement of this bill, that doesn't seal the deal. Who are the holdouts in the party? What part of the party is holding out here?
Well, it varies, and it varies based on what issue they are most concerned about. Several are very concerned about the border situation, because even to the extent that you solve, if you want to call it the current problem, which really means dealing with, as Rubio said, the 11 million people who are here right now, we're not sending them home, they're going to stay here, and I thought he made a good point calling it de facto amnesty. Okay. But what about the next wave? And that, again, has been one of the things that many Republicans were concerned about, because supposedly the amnesty that occurred in the 80s was supposed to solve the problem, and it didn't. And so it's the border security aspect. And at least in the draft that I saw, that talked about a trigger before all this would go into place that had to have border security, which has been a very elusive goal so far. So that's what a lot of Republicans, particularly in the Senate, are concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Libris, joining us from Iowa City, listening to our program. Thanks for dialing 1-866-780-9100. Libris, I hope we got your name right. Thank you. A nice name, by the way.
Yes, you did. I am totally opposed by this system, because what's going on is we're ameliorating the problem by using incorrect terminology. First of all, an immigrant, all immigrants in this country are legally here because they've gone through the processes. That's what makes them an immigrant. The I am an immigrant means not. They're not migrants. They are accepted as legal citizens, not as citizens, but legal residents in our country. Now, the people who sneak across our border illegally are not immigrants. They're trespassers. And I use this term legitimately because of the fact that they are evading the law. They're trying to go under the fence. And to accept people under that kind of a basis, I think, is totally an injustice.
Mm-hmm. I guess the question, though, Libris, is what to do with the 11 million plus who are already here, who are thoroughly integrated into our economic system, picking vegetables and all kinds of other jobs that other Americans don't seem to want to do. What do we do with that 11 million? That's what politicians have been wrestling with, both parties.
Well, you see, this goes back over 100 years when we were trying to get people to build our railroads and so forth, and we brought Chinese people in here because citizens didn't want to do the labor, they said, and all this. But the problem is that what we've been doing is we've been condoning people coming into this country without a proper process and without a proper response when they're coming here illegally. Mm-hmm. And what we have is a situation where when people come into this country, we're saying, oh, well, and we're constantly saying, oh, well, and they're having babies here. And we have the problem of saying that because somebody is born in our country makes them a citizen, well, but if they're here illegally, then we should have a law that says that it reverts them back to their parents' original nationality until they go through the proper process.
Libris,
thank
you for your perspective. Let's reach out to our analysts and see Wayne Moyer. What is the fix here? We hear a frustrated American citizen there.
Well, in some ways, we may be the people that are already here. I think we'll be better off if we in fact can know exactly who they are and where they are, and then we can even keep track in terms of people coming in. If we can strengthen the border, we can reduce the number of people coming in, and I think there's some evidence that the push of people across the border has decreased and is likely to decrease further over time. So I think in the long term, there are real gains to making legal the people who are already here.
Anything to add before we move on, Tim Hagel, to gun legislation?
Well, just quickly, one of the things that the caller mentioned at first is how the terminology has changed over time. It used to be illegal alien, then illegal immigrant, and now undocumented immigrant. And so it's you can argue that it's trying to normalize the process in some way or to try to destigmatize the folks that have come over. But on the other hand, that's, again, one of the sticking points for a lot of conservatives is the idea that these folks have violated the law, not the folks born here necessarily, but the folks that came here. And so they're being rewarded in some way. But on the other hand, it's such a large problem and how you deal with it, it's so complex. It's one of the reasons why we haven't found a solution yet. And as Rubio indicated, nothing's going to be perfect, but at least he feels that his plan is making progress.
Okay. Well, we want to address in this Politics Wednesday another item that's being discussed in Washington, has over many months, ever since that tragedy in December in Newport, Connecticut. The Senate due to vote on a proposal to expand background checks on firearms later today, a vote that highlights the challenges facing President Obama. Senate Democrats moving to the most important congressional vote on gun control in years, since the 90s, I think we established. What I'm reading this morning in analysis, gentlemen, is that this is not likely to pass this vote in the Senate to expand background checks. Wayne Moyer, have you been following this?
Yeah, they'll need 60 votes, and it looks like they have 57 or 58. It looks like the Republicans, with a very few exceptions, are going to vote against it. So my guess is that the background check proposal will fail.
Okay. Tim Hagel, your analysis of why it failed?
Well, it's always a combination of things, in that certain groups are very concerned that it's infringement on Second Amendment rights. And there are many people who say, well, the Second Amendment doesn't – it's not absolute, that there are always limitations. And that's certainly true. It's true of First Amendment rights, free speech, free press. All of these rights are not absolute. But the question is, how much are you going to allow for limitations? And certainly the administration pushed a poll that found that something on the order of 90% of people were in favor of background checks. Well, the problem was, to a certain extent, that they weren't clear on what they meant. People are in favor of background checks, but when you're talking about, you know, grandpa giving his gun to a neighbor or to grandson or granddaughter, that all of a sudden the government has to get involved, that's when you start talking specifics, that's when people get a little bit more nervous.
I guess the question then would be, Wayne Moyer, if the president and Democrats cannot defeat the powerful National Rifle Association and gun rights supporters even after that tragic shooting in Newtown, when can they win?
Well, I think the point now is this issue is on the agenda. It really was not on the political agenda before Sandy Hook. And now there are all sorts of newspaper and magazine articles coming out. The article in the New York Times this morning about how easy it is over the internet to buy guns. So there's now much more public discussion. I'm not sure where that discussion is going to come out. But even if we don't take action today, there's a good chance that over a period of time there will be some kind of action.
This past Saturday night, the comedy show Saturday Night Live lampooned the so-called compromise bill on gun control. Here are SNL cast members Bill Hader and Jason Sudeikis portraying Senators Pat Toomey and Joe Manchin trying to explain the bill.
First of all, most Americans agree that we need stricter background checks. If our bill passes, no individual can purchase a handgun from a private dealer without being asked, are you a good person? As well as the follow-up question, seriously, are you?
We're also hoping to limit the amount of ammunition you can carry in magazines. We did not do that, though.
But we have agreed to limit the number of guns you can shoot at once to two.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone caught shooting three or more guns at the same time, we prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the punishment is we give you a fourth gun.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
No, I don't know. It was a compromise, I think. Yeah. So.
Also, we're very proud of this. We were able to ban AK-47s from all coin-operated vending machines. Mm-hmm. And the Papa John's promotion, buy two medium pizzas, get a free gun, has been completely outlawed.
That's right. Well, except on weekends and during the Super Bowl.
Of course, this might go without saying, but none of these restrictions would apply to Florida. We don't know why.
Yeah.
It definitely should.
Definitely, yeah.
But they just don't. I don't know. It's a weird.
It is weird. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, because you know, I know we type, you know, Florida into the bill, but when we print it out, you know, I mean, it's just not there. It's a
spooky, spooky thing.
Yeah. So look, is this bill what we wanted? No. No. Is it what the NRA wanted? No. But does it at least help in some small way?
No.
No, probably not. It doesn't.
We are confident that this bill will pass the Senate, and it will then go to the House of Representatives, where it will immediately get shot down.
That's right. And that is not a metaphor. No, they will literally throw the bill up in the air and shoot it with a gun. I've seen it done.
Saturday Night Live cast members Bill Hader and Jason Sudeikis portraying Senators Pat Toomey and Joe Manchin. They're having a little bit of fun about a very serious issue there. But at the core of humor is often quite a bit of truth. Tim Hagel, I see you there nodding your head as you're seeing that. Did they nail it at Saturday Night Live in certain ways?
They did, and the beginning of it that you didn't play is where the president is introducing them and is yes. explaining how they have both basically lost their jobs as a result of proposing whatever they're proposing, which may or may not be true, but it's certainly true that Manchin from West Virginia and Toomey from Pennsylvania, two states where gun laws are taken very seriously, or gun rights are taken very seriously, that it is a political risk for them. And that's one of the concerns that folks have right now, is that anything that the Senate proposes is probably not going to pass in the House. And as a result, there's no political win for any senators who may be undecided or may be up for reelection and concerned as to how their voters in their state are going to pass this, whether they would be willing to go out on a limb and vote for some sort of restriction, or at least as is portrayed as a restriction.
Mm-hmm. Wayne Moya, you said this isn't going away from the political landscape. So what's the way forward? What do you see in the future in terms of gun legislation?
I think it will depend on to what extent this becomes an issue in the next congressional election, and whether we can sustain the discussion or the public conversation which is taking place now. If this does become an issue, and if for instance some seats change one way or the other as a result of people's positions on gun control, then that could well make a difference in terms of legislation after the 2014 election.
Let's go to Robert East, calling in from east of Des Moines. Robert, you may have your radio on. You may have to turn that down. We'd like to welcome you to the program. Robert, are you there? Robert, we'll give you a couple seconds.
Okay. My first point was that right now people are up in arms over the, you know, 30 people that have been shot at Sandy Hook and 15 here and 12 there, you know. So there's all this momentum based on emotion. However, the sin nature of mankind, as long as the sinful heart of mankind, you can outlaw whatever you want, and someone will find a way to injure or kill someone else. And it's a shame that there's so much attention on the 30 people shot or 15 here. Why has no one addressed the fact that over 50 million innocent preborn babies have been murdered through abortion in America since 1973.
Okay, Robert, thank you very much for your perspective from east of Des Moines. Anything else on your political mind there? What have you been following, Tim, lately?
Well, oddly enough, to follow up on what the caller was suggesting, is that the Kermit Gosnell murder trial that's occurring right now is something that's starting to get some national attention, mainly because of it not getting a lot of media attention because of the abortion angle, that he had run an abortion clinic and run it badly and some patients had died. And there's a trial for murder because the idea that some of the babies that were supposedly aborted were delivered alive, and then he killed them, and that's hence the murder charge. And so that's what's going on right now. But it didn't seem to be getting the amount of attention that you would expect. And so many conservative pundits have been pushing this, and now over the last week we're starting to see a little bit more of this. But it does have political implications.
Wayne Morey, you were on with us a couple of weeks ago talking about North Korea. That's faded or been pushed back in the headlines somewhat. And I know you look at international politics. We have about a minute left. Anything on the Korean Peninsula as far as an update?
Well, I think the situation is still very hot. Something could happen. It may be the military exercises between the U.S. and South Korea are about to end. I think there's a chance that the rhetoric will de-escalate. I hope that's what happens. But, you know, it's not only the Korea that's off the agenda as a result of the Boston killings on Monday, but Iran is off the agenda for the moment. Syria is off the agenda. These are all three of these are important issues, and they deserve public attention.
Wayne Morey, thank you for joining us this half hour. Rosenfield Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College. Thanks again, Wayne.
Thank you.
Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Thank you for coming through the rain to get into a studio in Iowa City. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting, on-demand audio, always available by going to iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Join us tomorrow when we'll talk about the evolution of the Girl Scouts of America. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.